after the gold rush by the ever poignant Neil Young. And as he uses those words and phrases and notes, he creates these mental pictures for all of us. I think he describes several different kinds of reality in that song, and we can see it. We can see it in our heads as he's singing those words. So it is, in a sense, virtual reality. The technology that Jules Erbach is describing, though, takes things much, much further, and it raises some pretty profound questions. You remember the movie Avatar? After it came out, it was such a big hit. And in fact, as we just learned, Jules's technology was a big part of the success of that film. A lot of people went into Avatar withdrawal. They loved Pandora so much, they kept going back to see the movie over and over again. They didn't want to leave that planet. Makes you wonder what happens to people when this other virtual reality technology is at their fingertips. Do they want to come back to their regular lives or just stay over there in that other place, that other reality? We're going to get into that question, and then the bigger picture of whether or not we are living in somebody else's simulated reality, virtual reality, and if so, how would we know? Big stuff coming in this hour. Stick around for this conversation with Jules Erbach on Coast to Coast. Jules, before we jump back into the deep end of the pool, OTOY, what is that, an anagram, or what's the origin of the name of your company?
It's actually OTOY, and OTOY. It's meant to sort of reference, I guess, where a lot of my creativity came from, which is playing with toys. You know, I loved action figures. I imbued them with life, and I a lot of what I wanted to see out of the work that the company did was to sort of bring that magic back. You know, and separate from all the you know, technology and business applications from that. So OTOY was kind of a concatenation of online and toy, but you can also take the logo apart, and it's made of ones and zeros, so it has these two meanings.
Let's go back to the sort of the big question that we sort of danced around a little bit, and which is so sort of a fundamental thing I wanted to ask you about. I've had that feeling, as a lot of people have, that some days feel more real than others. As you describe advances in virtual technology, where the wall between virtual and physical reality gets blurred more and more, it raises profound issues about whether or not if we are this advanced, and I'm sure you are maybe more advanced than even you're saying on the air, that there are things where boundaries that you've passed that maybe you can't even talk about, then somebody else, an older civilization, either here or some other dimension or other planet or some other reality, could have done the same thing. How would we know? Could you, as the god of your virtual reality universe, imbue characters in your non-physical realities with consciousness of sorts?
That is the question. because, of course, if we're living in a reality that is created or simulated, you know, one of the ideas about that would be that, you know, none of us are real and we're just programs. Yeah, I don't believe that, and I say that for a couple of reasons. I can't prove it, and it's very hard to deconstruct, you know, what a simulation above ours might be. But, you know, I will say that, you know, I've lived in reality like we all have, right, since I was a kid. But the qualia of what you experience as an observer, it does change. And of course, it's because your brain changes, your body, your life changes. But I think that if you can separate all the physical phenomena, even your brain, from the fact that you're aware and observing something, and if you sort of split that down the middle, then I think that is one of the big secrets to all of this. And as far as, you know, what, let's say, an alien civilization might do with just, you know, being 100 years more advanced than us, or certainly thousands, you know, there's a lot of thinking that goes into the notion that, well, you know, they're going to realize that being in a physical body, while it's biologically the only way maybe to get life started, is a big limiting factor. Just as we decided after a certain period of time, you know, that, you know, well, here's the Industrial Revolution. Now we have all this energy. We can, you know, instead of riding horses, we can create boats and cars. It's very likely that at some point, when you have a reality that is, for all practical purposes, easier to live in and preferable than the physical one, what an alien civilization might end up doing is taking all of the energy they can and focusing that on it just you know, a giant supercomputer hiding their planet and living within a virtual simulation. And if there is some sort of remnant of the biological brains, maybe it's like the Matrix. They're in a, you know, in a catacomb or something like that. It's really not a crazy thing to imagine an alien civilization or any civilization, including our own, eventually doing. And that is sort of why you might, you know, get to the point where, well, if that's sort of how civilizations typically evolve, if that really is the path that we're on, then it's possible that in one of these, you know, virtual simulations from, either from this universe or a universe sort of at a higher level of reality than we are, that we're just part of that. And I certainly think from a technical perspective, it's likely. It also might explain why we just don't see, you know, type 2 or type 3, which are, you know, it's alien civilizations, right, which would have, you know, you'd see a lot of, you know, if for example, you had a civilization that could harness the power of the sun or a galaxy, you'd see some sort of infrared signature of that, and we don't. And, you know, you have a well-understood paradox called the Fermi paradox, where if there's, you know, and we now know there's billions of planets just in our galaxy that are Earth-like. It seems
older than us. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Older.
Yeah, it just seems, and of course, you know, it just seems very likely that there would be life everywhere. And, you know, that there would certainly be a lot of advanced civilizations and that we would see some sort of evidence of that, but we don't, you know, and maybe we don't know enough to make a conclusive decision on whether or not we should see more than we are. But one of the likely outcomes may simply be, just based on what we know about ourselves, that alien civilizations just at some point either go into a computer simulation or get taken over by computer conscious entities that they make themselves, which goes back to your earlier question as to whether or not you can just out of whole cloth create consciousness digitally. And I think that's a very tough question. I believe that you can absolutely create intelligence that is self-aware in the computer that just feels like you're talking to a real person, or it feels like it would be a living thing. Is that a philosophical zombie? Does it really understand and give meaning to the things the same way that we do, being biological entities? Hard to say, because that is more of a subjective and internal experience. But we're already seeing the things that we thought only humans could really do, computers are able to do those things really well. Most recently, you know, AI won, you know, a Go championship, which is one of the harder games for computers to play. Of course, self-driving cars, anything that humans can learn, you can almost expect that a computer would be able to learn that. And I think that you could extend that a little bit further and think, well, if a human can learn how to be human and act human and converse with other humans, an AI could do the same thing. But it doesn't necessarily mean that AI is human, you know, and experiences the same things that we do.
Tough to say what the difference is if it's self-aware and it could do what we do. I don't know. You certainly tend to blur the lines.
There's a great show on TV now called Westworld, which is, I just watched the third episode tonight, and it's based on a book by Michael Crichton, and there was a 70s version of the show, and it's basically about robots that have that very same philosophical quandary. Are they real? Obviously, these robots are sort of mistreated by the guests. They're going into this amusement park where the robots are there to sort of fill in this virtual environment, and it is this really deep question as to whether or not, if the robots are as real as we are, then it kind of does point to the possibility that we're no more real or less real than anything that could be created in a computer. And it's hard to say, you know, it comes down to this very subjective aspect as to whether or not there's anything that is part of our experience and our awareness that isn't, you know, just a bunch of neurons that can be created in the physical world. And that's something that science is pointing more and more towards, there being, you know, not very little there. But I'm not sure that science covers everything either. I mean, we don't fully understand reality. We don't fully understand, you know, even, you know,
consciousness,
how this thing came to be. So it's like, even if there was somebody that simulated our universe, what started that? Like, it goes back to the, you know, creation of the cosmos to begin with. It's a very hard problem to sort of wrap your head around.
Back to the question about an older, more advanced civilization existing around us. We wouldn't see it. Maybe it doesn't want to be seen. Maybe it goes into some virtual reality where we wouldn't spot it. I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but I mean, it raises some other interesting questions. I think you probably listen to the show now and then, so you know what some of our principal topics are. But Whether or not we get glimpses of other realities, virtual realities in the form of UFOs or ghosts or things that we do not understand or which do not sort of comply with known physical laws, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, there could certainly be a glitch in the Matrix, right? You know, if we're living in the Matrix, and of course, I think a lot of viewers are familiar with the movie The Matrix. You know, if you remember the film, there were glitches where you could see that things weren't quite the way they're supposed to be. And I would say that, from a spiritual perspective, right? Because, I mean, try by things like ghosts and things. I mean, because aliens are fairly straightforward. If they're either there or they're not, and if they have advanced, you know, transportation, whether it's warp drive that would be maybe 10 times faster than light, or, you know, some sort of hyperspace wormhole creation system, which is really beyond understanding, you can imagine physically how that could be, that there could be aliens that could come here. But when you talk about things like ghosts or entities that just don't even have a parallel to alien life, and of course I'm familiar with a lot of these. I haven't experienced anything like that myself personally, but I think a lot about, you know, the whole notion of spirits. I mean, ghosts and haunting aside, if there is any survival of consciousness after your physical body is gone, like, that is an interesting question that, if you're just going back to, you know, the old religious and spiritual texts, it doesn't really get fully answered. But if you're living in a simulation where, you know, your awareness is essentially dropped into an avatar in this reality, when your avatar, by the rules of the simulation you're in, gets killed or destroyed or just dies or decomposes, then your consciousness might very well just go back up into the reality above it. And if that's true of everything that's alive, not just everyone, but everything, then it might be easier to imagine that if you know, without it being anything about, you know, spiritual or ghosts, that if it's just a layer of reality where your consciousness can be transported in and out of, you know, your incarnations in this physical world, then there may be, you know, a thin veneer between those where you might be able to see the influence of the layer of reality above yours in certain cases. And it may also be that those, you know, the sort of the winnowing or the thinning of those barriers might be because we ourselves are connected to it. It's not just the physical matter, but more our ability to perceive and send information back up into the higher level reality. And that's why I was getting back to the difference between an AI and somebody that is generally, you know, that is alive, that we, you know, like us. It's, you know, if you imagine that the reality above us isn't even simulated in a computer, then it's just pure symbolic thought. That is something that isn't impossible. I mean, it's a philosophical premise. It's, you know, that might be hard to prove, but, you know, you can imagine a world of thought and a world that is not physical where it could still be real. I mean, the Pythagorean theorem is real. You know, mathematical principles are real. They're just actuated in the physical world and according to these laws when we bring them in and imagine them and then put them into practice through action, and sometimes embody them in physical forms like a record or, you know, piece of text that can be passed along. I think that is the closest that I can sort of come to imagining how there could be something unseen, you know, that's sort of in a parallel dimension to ours. And it's more easy to explain it technically when you imagine this being a simulation and there just being a different type of simulation above it. And wouldn't it be interesting if all of the notions of the afterlife were simply that you went to a simulation where the laws of physics were relaxed and where you didn't have to worry about food or your body, and it was much more about your thoughts driving your experiences in the so-called heaven. But I do think that the idea of spirituality that's more on the Eastern philosophical lines of thought, where there is reincarnation, where, and even Gnostic, you know, Christianity, which talks about there being, you know, a deity that is sort of not the ultimate God, but one that is sort of creating a false reality that we have to sort of be imprisoned in, and then we have to sort of escape it by mentally freeing ourselves of that. You know, that's the kind of stuff that is super interesting, and you can kind of start to explore that with virtual reality, because you're starting to sort of put together a lot of the pieces that, they could sort of build the case for how that could work. And I guess, you know, if people have near-death experiences, or if something were to happen to me and I'm in a car accident, and then all of a sudden it's like ghost and I see myself in yet a different reality, my first thought would be, well, it's not that there's an afterlife, it's that we are living in a simulation and now I'm in, you know, the lobby area of this video game. I mean, I'm in a different area of this, and the rules of physics might be different. And that
you got doppelgangers, you got time slips. People experience what they describe as time slips. There are places where, I mean, maybe you call it paranormal. Maybe you call it a ghost or a poltergeist or something, because we don't exactly know how to categorize it. Places, in the words of the Irish, where the world is thin, where this kind of unusual stuff happens. We just can't quite describe it. It's like another reality bleeding into ours.
Yeah. Which would make a lot of sense if there's multiple realities that are all sort of interconnected. And I, you know, again, the thing that's hard for people when they deal with it is like, wow, this is unexplained. I mean, that's really how you categorize these experiences. Like, you know, Jeremy was telling me about Skinwalker Ranch, right, which I guess you guys have been looking at. I mean, I the phenomena there sound incredible, but if you were to try to find it, you know, and I wouldn't call it a scientific explanation, but, you know, an objective explanation for it, if there are layers of simulated realities, some of which are very different than ours, and we ourselves are sort of connected to them through another simulation layer, this all could make sense. And in fact, there's a lot of philosophical implications from this, you know, from this kind of thinking. And it is a way of sort of starting to get a scientific basis for some of the crazier things that people see and report if you take this premise seriously. And that's why I think it's really interesting in relation to a lot of phenomena that, frankly, haven't been easy to explain.
Let me ask you this. We're going to go to a break here in about 2.5 minutes. Ray Kurzweil was my guest on this show a couple of years ago. Of course, you know that name. And his idea about the singularity, he's trying to live long enough to where his consciousness, his brain, I don't know if it's consciousness, but his brain could be uploaded to a computer and he could live forever. That idea has a great deal of appeal, the idea of even if you're living in a computer and not in as a human or in a human body, that you achieve a measure of immortality. What's your take on that one?
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned that George Gilder, who had, gave the quote about me, and I had lunch with George and Ray Kurzweil, it was about 6-7 years ago. Huh. And I remember Ray making that case to me and to George. There's another member of the circle of people, Carver Mead, who is really well known in computer science because he helped create Microprocessor Revolution. He also is studying biologically how easy it is for us to understand the human brain and whether it's really possible for us to copy our consciousness into a computer. And I would say it's 50-50. I can't tell you that it's possible. I just don't know. You think it might be, and it could be, but it's. I don't think we're that close to being able to upload our brains. We might be able to copy our behaviors and our patterns and create a philosophical zombie, sort of an AI that looks and behaves just like us, and maybe that's enough for our loved ones to have a version of ourselves that they could talk to. But if it's the physical, if it's, you know, the core of our existence that we'd want to transfer, possibly. I mean, the way that you could sort of think about this as a thought experiment is if you replace every cell in your brain one by one with a computer, you know, hook into the matrix or into the into a virtual world, that at some point your consciousness would be transferred. And you can argue that that already happens in real life, where every 7 to 8 years, all your cells are completely replaced with new ones. So physically, you're just not identical to who you were before, but your identity persists. So, I think it's possible, but I can't tell you that it's something that is really imminent in the next decades. I'm much more confident about us being able to simulate, you know, every other aspect of reality. And I'm also...
The music is telling us we're going to go to a break. We're going to continue this part of the conversation and then maybe look at some of the downsides, the risks of virtual reality technology. Jules Orbach is my guest. It's fascinating stuff. Hope you stick around. This is a new song. There's a video out of it. It's from an album that has not yet been released by British star Robbie Williams, who is called Party Like a Russian. The video is hilarious. It's a great tune. And like I said, it's not yet released, so I asked Robbie if we could play it on Coast to Coast, and he gave us the green light. However, I learned that I guess some Russian oligarchs have seen this song and really are ticked off about it. So they have banned Robbie Williams from ever performing in Russia again, because if you see the video, it pokes a little fun, has a little fun at their expense, I guess. I guess maybe Rob could say that he's wearing that with a badge of honor. All of you who want to poke Putin in the eye, check out that video. It's called Party Like a Russian. That's pretty good stuff. We're talking with Jules Orbach about the possibilities of virtual reality. There are some great ones, and there are some scary ones. I mean, one of the little ones that he mentioned early in our interview was the possibility that you put these glasses on and you record everything. I mean, everything that you see. In essence, I mean, there's a record of your entire life, which might be cool to replay some parts, but you got to wonder, could other people access that? Military, intelligence folks, all kinds of possibilities get raised. We're going to get into some of those in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. So, Jules, so much potential virtual reality technology that you're describing. I mean, it's really an exciting time to be alive, and there's some really cool stuff that could happen. Also, some scary stuff. I was thinking, I mentioned a little while ago in the program, the movie Avatar comes out. People go to see it day after day because they want to live on Pandora. Your goggles, you develop them, they create a new world. People, I can see it easily happening that people are much more interested in living in that world than in this one, and they stay there and they wither away. I mean, you can see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. When people, even 20 years ago, were sort of showing these dystopian futures with VR being part of it, it was, you almost had these kinds of, like Ghost in the Shell, for example, was a Japanese anime that showed a distant future where they had almost like opium den type of things where you go into VR and you just wouldn't leave because it was like heroin. And I do think that's a real danger. And I have friends that are, not in the industry that ask me about it and say, well, it's terrible. You know, if kids today are like stuck playing video games and looking at their iPhones, and of course you have extreme examples where internet cafes in China where there are gamers that just die because they're so addicted to playing these games. It is a scary thought, and I've thought about it a lot, and I was asked about it last week, and this is sort of my thinking about it and how I described where I think, the danger lies, but also why I'm sort of optimistic that it can be something we get through. And it's sort of as follows, because one of the things that I think that people will immediately appreciate from this technology is not just that you can experience things that look real. I mean, the work that we're doing is as much about creating those realities from the average person. So if you wanted a wish experience to come to life, rather than just playing somebody else's experience in game, like current video games are, that will come. I mean, that's the part that we're building. And that means that if you wanted to have a reality that was tell it for yourself, you could really just imagine it, and you wouldn't have to go far to get that experience to happen when all these pieces are in place. And I think that's important. But what's interesting is that if you create your own reality and you're the god of it, like what happens when somebody else wants to do the same thing? So the first thing that might happen in this is you'd sort of have a choice where you can really do anything you want in your personal, private VR experience. But it's not going to be very meaningful if you are participating in a larger shared reality where there is going to be challenges in collaboration to how that works. So there was just a thought experiment that I brought up in a week ago when I was describing this, and it's a good one because it's been around for a while, which is if you had the choice to go into, let's say, a tube like the Matrix where you're just plugged into this heavenly realm and you, it's like a dream. You basically aren't connected to anything in the outside world, but everything is the way that you want. It's more lucid than a dream, but you even forget that you were ever in a different world. So you get everything that you want, even people and all these things that as our minds can do when they populate in our dreams, other characters, other things, our wishes are fulfilled. And we would never know differently, but the other option is you stay in a world that's less perfect, but everyone that you love, everything you know, all the things that you still have to fear are there. Those challenges are there, and the thought experiment was designed to test whether or not you actually give meaning to the things that are outside of yourself. Because if you're totally self-absorbed and you just want to have a world that no matter what the cost is, it suits you, you'll choose the option of going into this enclosed tube and just being completely disconnected from the world you currently know is real. And I think what's going to end up happening as this technology evolves is you'll probably have both options. You'll be able to sort of create your own world and do that. You won't be stuck in it, but it's also going to get very stale. I mean, the danger of that first choice is that, you go into that world where all your dreams are fulfilled with dreams that you've created from being exposed to, thousands of years of civilization and billions of other people, good and bad. And at some point, if you're in a simulation that is completely self-contained, you'll basically work through everything. You won't even be able to sort of create new things because you won't be exposed to outside forces. Like if somebody went in there in the 1700s, let's say, and they didn't know about planes and spaceships, or they wouldn't even have that kind of simulated dream. So I do think that what's going to happen is that people might actually burn out having perfect worlds that they're completely lost, and then basically go back and seek out more collaborative spaces that are much more like the world that we live in now, where it's like you have groups, civilizations studying, sharing things, and it's going to be a more normal existence. But I think when virtual reality really gets to this point initially, you will get people that will absolutely lose themselves in there, and it may take a while for there to be sort of that cycle where they're done with that. But eventually, I think it's going to be it will be sort of solved, and I think the collaborative aspect and the social aspect of ultimate virtual reality is very compelling. And it does fulfill a lot of the roles that we see physically represented in society. You'll have education that'll be drastically improved. You'll be able to go to any lecture you want, and it'll feel like you're really there. Visual learning will be improved because instead of reading about something on Wikipedia in an image, you'll be able to see holographically this thing being created. You'll have other people teaching you this sort of thing. You can design architectural buildings with people all around the world and see almost physically rendered. And so there's a lot of cases where it's going to be a good thing. You might also, of course, be able to visit places in the real world, and it'll be like you're really there. And that could include the surface of Mars, for example, which is a commonly used example of where it would be possible to send somebody without a spacesuit comfortably to this location. And I think that there's a lot of, replication of people's desires and thinking about what they may want to have in VR, and then you're going to have a lot of the current world that we know and love basically also brought in there. But what's exciting to me beyond that is that when you give people the tools to create anything, and there's another school of thought, which is, well, eventually you're going to have nanotechnology and utility fog and 3D printing, and anything you can imagine will be created in the physical world. I postulate that is not going to be better than a reality that is completely digital and virtual, which is even more fluid, and allows us to sort of transcend, many of the limitations that the physical world imposes on our experience.
Yeah, people without who can't walk anymore or something.
Absolutely. You're at your example of flying. The first thing that already people have discovered in VR in the last 2 years, we did a thing for Warner Brothers where you get to explore the Batcave, and the first thing I did was, well, I'm going to walk from the Bat computer to the Batmobile, and it's a minute or 30 seconds. I'd rather just teleport there. And that's the kind of stuff where you realize, it's not so great to perfectly recreate the real world. I mean, it's a good exercise. People may want it so that they feel like, well, if I want to have this experience and have it be just like the physical world, it's there. But I think that very shortly thereafter, people will want to take shortcuts. You're not going to be locked into, listening to a concert in music and not seeing the synesthesia effect of the sound waves visually represented in your eyes. And that's the other thing, is that your sensory organs have evolved over, obviously, millions of years to deal with the physical world. But that doesn't mean that the sensation of touch and taste and sound and light can't be totally mixed around when you have a virtual body that can, almost sense a virtual world in very different ways. Like when you touch something, maybe you can generate a bunch of trails of light that you can see for 30 seconds afterwards, things that you can't do in the real world that would make, temporal and spatial experiences very different.
I want to come back to that whole question of evolution in a minute, because you mentioned Lawnmower Man, so that whole conversation. But something you had mentioned early in our conversation was about you put on these glasses, they record your life as you go along. Presumably all of that could be stored somewhere. It's a tremendous opportunity to review your life and keep a record of it, and other people could see it as well. It'd be I don't know if it's eventually everybody could do it. It's in a giant computer stored somewhere, the equivalent of the Akashic record or something, and in a giant iCloud. But it also raises possibilities of privacy. Somebody else wants to live your life, or they want to just eavesdrop on you, hacking into your life. I'm sure you've thought these through a lot further than I have. But great potential and great questions.
Yeah, that's a great point. But here's the thing. I don't think this is going to make the danger of, I mean, certainly when you have a pair of glasses, and I think people will use it to record everything because you can then review things more easily. And if you record anything with your iPhone, and you could keep your iPhone recording all day long and upload it to Google or Apple
You
servers
would.
or Facebook,
Yeah.
and it's there and it's the same problem. I mean, there's really no limit. There's no real limit to storing your experiences that you see through these glasses or your phone indefinitely in the cloud. That's almost a solved problem. And if you do that, if you turn on a record button and it's no matter what the device is, you're taking a risk that the second it goes into a public server, it could be hacked, it could be spied on. And the only real way to solve that is to just not record those things. And you have to be careful. There's an even greater danger that exists even now, forget VR. If your phone is, if you have a laptop or you have a phone, and that phone is hacked, you could just turn on the camera without turning on the light. You can turn on the microphone. It's a known technique, and it's used by both bad actors and governments to spy, and it's terrible. So but it's not going to get necessarily any worse when you have a pair of glasses that you put on because I have an iWatch, sorry, Apple Watch, and it already has a microphone, and it could also be hacked and things on me all the time. So even I leave my phone on the table, it just feels like it's very hard. You almost have to turn off all existing equipment, of course, a
I
VR
got
device,
you. Yeah,
to
I
really
already feel
touch.
that way.
Yeah.
The other sort of negative possibility that occurs to me is in the wrong hands. If you create a virtual reality, you can recreate dead celebrities. You could create entire events, a newscast, manipulate opinion. You could a UFO invasion appears in the sky. Holographic technology. You see where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I think that there's already a an, it's very easy to create photos in Photoshop that are completely synthetic and they look real. And it's now become a very common thing that, oh, it's Photoshop, and
Right.
it's not going to be hard, especially with the tools we're creating, and even before you get to VR, to just create synthetic renders that look really good. And I think we have customers that have done alien invasion things with our tools and put it on YouTube. I mean, just to for fun, and it's easy. It's not hard to do that. The thing is, if you're talking about doing something where you project that into reality holographically, we're probably
Or
that's
a
pretty common.
newscast, even, you
But the
know.
newscast absolutely could be fake. The question is, it would, somebody would probably pick up on it, and it would be. But it's all that is doable today. I don't think that that's something that's going to. It might get easier in the future, cheaper. But somebody wants to fake something. It doesn't cost a whole lot to do it. A couple of artists with the tools that we built can almost build anything. I mean, there's beautifully rendered content that I can't tell whether it's a photo or not. It is done with our software, and you could use that to with a desktop to build really compelling videos that could be used for sure nefarious purposes to trick people into thinking something happened. It gets very dangerous with people. So when we talk about scanning, like we scanned Obama, the President of the United States, for the Smithsonian on the light stage, the same thing we use for Avatar. And I was thinking, my goodness, that's not great. If somebody has that data set, they can make the president say and do anything. They may not need to go even to that level to make something that's kind of convincing, but certainly when you have a scan of somebody, it's meant to go into a film or a movie or preserve their facial features. You can make them say and do anything. And at that point, people have to understand that, yeah, you probably can't necessarily trust that everything you see in video form was recorded on a camera.
Gotcha.
And that is kind of interesting to consider the possibilities there.
If I were in charge of the CIA, I'd come and scoop you up, I guess. I wonder if there have been entreaties like that. Hey, Jules, we could really use a guy with your talents, or whether they have their own folks who are doing the kind of work that you're doing, or somewhere along the same lines.
I've met a number of people in government, Michael Hayden a couple of times, and but it's funny. I mean, I think our work with rendering and graphics, it's I think a lot there's a lot of the research grants that came into the scanning technology was by the Army to sit for training soldiers. That's about the only real intersection that we've had, with government work. Everything else, a lot of I don't really see it that much overlap. I mean, if the NSA wanted to create totally virtual broadcast or newscast, they probably wouldn't necessarily come through those channels to us. But I do think that the fact that our tools are basically, you can buy them on our website and download them, means that if somebody really wanted to use them to that end, they wouldn't have to do anything special. They would, you know, our entire company is designed around giving everybody in the world the ability to create these beautifully rendered images, videos, and soon, you know, holographic realities that will be beamed into these glasses.
Let me ask you about, we got to go to a break in a couple of minutes, so this might spill over into the next segment. We got about 4 minutes, I think, before the break, but the idea of human evolution, you know, the temptations to live in that other virtual world would be great for reasons that you've sort of touched on already. It seems to me that people would be tempted to, if there are folks who could somehow implant an iPhone into their head right now, they'd do it. And there would be inherent advantages to somebody whose brain was already hooked up to some kind of supercomputer. Does it mean we will transform into something else?
I think so. Only because I think that you're bringing up Ray Kurzweil's, you know, thought experiment or desire to have his brain uploaded into the computer. I think that you could get a similar effect, you know, because he's going after immortality, right? He doesn't want his body to die. If you could somehow keep the brain alive and get rid of the rest of the body and put that in a box or in a tube or some storage thing, and then the rest of the world that you experienced was you know, projected into your brain. I mean, that effectively, you know, and the brain was kept alive, that is effective immortality. And I think that that's going to be an option for people if we can't, you know, extend, you know, human life to beyond a certain point, or if you can extend it to 122 years, which is, I guess, the upper limit, and the last, you know, 40 years are pretty rough. Like, you know, I can imagine that at 80 years old, I might opt for going into a, you know, sort of a computer-assisted living world where I could at least spend the last third of my life, if it could be extended that far, you know, in that sort of experience. And maybe, you know, if we're lucky, you know, we can extend that further. But yeah, I do think that people are going to opt in to have deeper and deeper connections. And the reason for that is that if somebody is obsessed with having all their physical senses completely connected to the virtual world, I don't think that's necessary to have all the benefits of virtual reality, but if people want to have that where they're just, you know, every sense is like connected into there, there will be at some point the technology to connect into your cerebral cortex or your visual cortex, and just you're plugged in, just like in the Matrix. And that would be something where it might be, you know, the first generation that might need invasive surgery to pull off. I think some people will opt for it. I don't know if it'll be necessary, because I do think that there's a low entropy value to just having your physical body completely slavishly recreated in VR. I think the more interesting thing is if you just have your mind transported in there and you have a virtual body, and your mind is very plastic and adaptive. It could learn how to reconfigure itself to understand, you know, senses and feelings and things like that. It might even be more pleasurable and more deep to have it work that way than the way that our bodies have evolved to. So I do think that's where things are headed. And I also think that might explain, again, where if there's other civilizations that are advanced, even near our point of technology, that it's likely that they sort of transcended into that level as well.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking more, not necessarily immortality, but more augmentation of everything that we've got anyway. I mean, you know, bionic arms and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. If you look at people that have had spinal cord injuries or lost limbs, you can get it to the point now where, you know, your brain is able to control with pretty decent precision prosthetic limbs. And, of course, you have patients that have had pretty severe spinal cord injuries that they can move a mouse with their mind. And that's also where I think there's a lot of compelling advancements to be made with being able to scan in your mind. If you're already wearing the glasses, you could probably, you know, get your alpha and beta waves and use that to drive your virtual self. And I think it's been proven that you can do a lot with that. And that might be an alternative to any sort of, you know, invasive connections to your body.
All right. We're talking with Jules Urbach about the possibilities, the potential of virtual reality. In a moment, we'll be opening up the phone lines with your questions and comments. I know a lot of you will want to call in. Classic surf rock song, Apache, takes us into the break.